Hello. Chapter 12 discusses doing business internationally in the global market. This chapter will be mostly, I think you'll find the most difficulty in the terms. There are a few questions, a few things you have to remember, but that will not be particularly difficult. Let's, again, go down through the sections and look at the topics as we come to them, and then we'll try to go back and summarize the terms. What is the global market? Bigger than this, that what it is the idea that there is a global market. That if we're in business, that we may sell our goods anywhere in the world. There are ways to do that we'll discuss in a minute, but let's get there. In section two, we ask, why would we do this? Discussion of that is, why would I do it? Because it would be a larger set of potential customers for me. What benefits might I accrue from that? Obviously, sell more revenue, more profit. But even better yet is the positive view and the competition, the experience we would gain. The text does a good job of discussing this, but I want you to consider what possibilities you might come up with. What would be the benefits of doing business internationally? Of course, there are drawbacks too, but we won't go into those. What kind of things do I consider when going there? I think we'll ask that question better when we talk about the barriers to international trade. But I would have to consider, is my product, my marketing strategy, my interests suitable for doing business internationally and selling in the global market? Now, in Section 3, there are three basic ways to do that. I could have just asked you to name these, but I will ask you to select these three from a longer list. But don't miss this one. It's too obvious. One way to do it is simply to sell the stuff and ship it there. I might sell it over the Internet. I might have people order it from a catalog or some similar way. And we would call that exporting. If I stay here and I sell it to people there, to customers there. The second way would be to not quite do that, but to have a partner, to work with someone there, a company there that bought my products and then distributed them. Now I've created something of an international marketing channel, but the point is I have another agency there that I'm working with, another company perhaps. Or finally, I could go there and do it myself. This would require me to hire people, rent a building, buy a building, maybe to manufacture it, maybe just to help me sell it. But by doing that, I would invest money in that country, and so we call that direct investment. So what are the three basic strategies? Sell it from here, sell it with the help of someone there, or go there and sell it there myself. We call those exporting, international partners, and direct investment. Be able to recognize those. In Section 4, we start to look at the barriers. What kind of barriers, what kind of things might make it difficult for me to sell overseas? Well, the first two are pretty general, domestic and international. There may be domestic barriers, and these may be closely tied in with number three, political. It may be that we don't want to sell to some countries, some items. Think of certain military equipment to some countries. There are people in the United States who would simply not sell that kind of item to some nations. So there may be domestic barriers, cultural kind of issues that we'll get to later too. There may be international type barriers, another very, very general thing. There may be laws, rules, regulations, shipping costs that keep me from doing it easy. And then variations on those, number three, may be political. There may be problems with doing that. I may not want to sell to a nation because their politics don't suit with mine. Business and legal issues, finance, other law issues beyond simply political. And finally, there may be cultural differences. They may not be willing to buy my product in those other countries. It may not be suitable for those countries. Think certain music, alcohol, certain types of products like that. They just simply aren't accepted in some nations. So types of barriers, I do want you to be able to name these five. If I had said name two, they would obviously be domestic and international. Variations on those, slightly more specific, are political, business/legal, and cultural. Be able to name those. Then we look at some few terms here related to that. These are typically political, legal type barriers, but understanding what these are is good in understanding international business. A tariff is simply a tax on imports. When goods are shipped into a country, they're sometimes taxed. If I try to sell goods overseas, I may have to pay tariffs on them in some countries. There may also be quotas and embargoes. A quota is a limit on how many can be imported into a country. How many cars, how many computers, how many of some item. If none are allowed at all, if the quantity is zero, we call it an embargo. And finally, the other term, dumping. Dumping means to sell stuff low cost. Think of it as low cost in order to simply penetrate the market. We once accused Japan of doing this with Toyotas. They were bringing them over here and selling them low cost to get a foothold in our automobile market in the United States. Toyota argued loudly and longly that they weren't selling them low cost. They were selling them at very low profit to gain market share. But dumping means selling low cost. Now, we get into Section 5. This section is important to me. If you were in the classroom, we would discuss this in some detail. Online, it's simply a matter of being able to identify those terms, GATT and NAFTA, being able to understand and memorize and recite these five levels of economic integration. But it's really more than that. By reciting these, you should be familiar with the concept. The concept is that nations will eventually start to work together and evolve into one nation. And they do that through a series of steps driven by business pressures. And those steps are free trade area, customs union, common market, economic union, and political union. The brief version of this is that if two nations share a common border, they will tend to want to trade back and forth. At some point in time, they will decide that having tariffs and quotas and embargoes between themselves is ridiculous. That's a barrier, that's blocking trade, not good for business, and they want to remove those. When they remove those, we call it a free trade area. When they do that, they will quickly find that those kind of rules that they had for other countries, tariffs, quotas, and embargoes, now have to be the same for these two nations, or they're ineffective. If there's no barriers on the borders between Canada and the United States can't very well have tariffs and quotas and embargoes on Japanese products, or they will simply be shipped into Canada and moved across the border free. Making those import and export laws, customs laws, the same, and making those two nations look like one market to the rest of the world is the gist of those two steps, customs union and common market. Now, if those two steps are obtained, or I should say when they're obtained, when they're reached, businesses still aren't happy because now they still have two common money systems and banking systems. There will be pressure on the governments to remove those barriers, to have one common financial system, one set of money, one set of banks, rules and regulations, to make business easier between, in our example, Canada and the United States. When that finally happens and we have one money and banking system, we call it an economic union. At that point, business is almost happy, but there's still different rules and regulations. Think things like OSHA, equal employment opportunity, environmental laws, clean air, pollution laws, those kinds of things. Businesses would like to see those regulations standardized between those two nations that are already one common market to the rest of the world and actually are an economic union. So when you have one set of rules and regulations, what do you have? When we're talking about economic integration, we call it a political union. The fact is that when you have a political union, you actually have one nation. So what have we accomplished here by moving through these steps of economic integration? We've actually moved from two nations to being one nation. And it's seen by many as being an inevitable fact that if two nations exist side by side, they will either conflict or they will begin to cooperate. If they begin to cooperate, they will move through these five steps. You should remember and understand that concept. The way I want to remind you of it and test you on it is simply to have you be able to name those five levels of economic integration. Remember, you do proceed through them sequentially, so you should be able to name those in order. Now, that pretty much covers the outline, but before we leave this chapter, we need to be able to look back and think about the terms a minute. Make sure we're comfortable with those. We'll do that now. I'm a little afraid that the terms in Chapter 12 may cause you some problem. I want you to listen closely to what I say today. I'm going to try to give you some of the key phrases to separate some of these. Frankly, the difference in some of these terms is a little artificial and limited to context. Also, look in the textbook, but the textbook does not give clear, concise, simple definitions. So, again, try to pay close attention here. Looking down this list, the first term is trade intermediaries. I simply want you to think of this as a general term for anyone that helps us distribute products in foreign countries. The key thought there is that it's a general term for anyone that helps distribute. After that, we get to export management companies, export trading companies, and manufacturers' export agents. These are trade intermediaries. These are the ones that help us do that. So how do we separate these? Think of export management companies as, we might best describe those as simply being merchant intermediaries. Now, what's the difference between that and trade intermediaries? The word merchant. That means they actually buy and sell the stuff. But for your test, think of them as merchant intermediaries. Export trading companies. They are businesses that buy and sell products in a number of countries. They don't just operate in between the United States and England. They buy and sell in a number of countries. So we call them export trading companies. Then the third one in that group is manufacturers export agents. The key word here being agents, and agents work on commission. So we think of these MEAs as being limited in scope. They operate in a limited number of areas, unlike export trading companies, and they operate on commission. Export merchants are wholesalers from a country that do business in other markets. So wholesalers doing business in other markets are export merchants. After that, I think they become a little simpler. Resident buying offices are operations we put together to buy local goods and services. We may set up a resident buying office in China to buy Chinese goods for our company, or to buy raw materials for what we're building. Foreign joint venture, think of it as an alliance between companies. A joint venture is an alliance between companies. Foreign licensing. Licensing is when we give someone the right to use our products or to sell our products for a fee. We gain money from them because we give them the right to use our products or sell our products. Counter trade is usually done by governments, but that involves tying trade together. We will agree to allow this product to be sold to your country if you will agree to allow us to buy this product from your country. Governments normally set that up, and that's counter trade. Bartering is if we trade goods for goods. I will trade you a load of corn for a load of wheat. That is bartering. With that, I think you'll be okay. I don't like to look at the terms in that detail, but I think these are a little artificial in scope. This chapter may be a little out of place in the overall course. It is in the text. We are covering it, and I hope you're better prepared for your test on it now. Thank you very much.